Daf Yud Tes Amud Aleph. The second wide line on Daf Yud Tes Amud Aleph. But George, should we get another table over here? Yeah? Okay. The second wide line on Daf Yud Tes Amud Aleph. Towards the end of the line, we have Tana Debe Rabbi Yishmael, right? Tana Debe Rabbi Yishmael. So he began the sugya that talks about how Hashem, Kiviyachol, takes personally the issue of a Talmud Chacham's honor. And therefore, even though generally a dead person doesn't care what you say about him after he's dead, in the case of a Talmud Chacham, it's considered kiviyochol a personal slight to Hashem, and Hashem will take extreme action on behalf of the Talmud Chacham. So now we're going to see a few more things about upholding the dignity of a Talmud Chacham. Interestingly, not only in a public way, but even in your own mind. So here we have something interesting. Tana de Be'ab Yishmael. Im ra'isa Talmud Chacham sha'ovar aveira balayla. If you see a Talmud Chacham did an Aveira at night, Al Tahare Acharov B'yoim, don't think lowly of him even the next day. Shema Asa Tshuva, because he may have done Tshuva. So the Gemara asks, Shema Asa Kedaitach, what, maybe he did Tshuva? What do you mean maybe? Elavadai Asa Tshuva, he certainly did Tshuva. Meaning, when you have a person who's a truly conscientious person, living the way a person is supposed to live, as we've discussed other times, tshuva, lechatchila, is meant to be done immediately. It's not meant to wait for Yom Kippur. Right? That's Rabbi Yehuda, all of those who codify tshuva, lay down the halachas of tshuva, state that tshuva should be done immediately. So therefore, the assumption is, when a person is on the right level, a conscientious person, he does tshuva immediately. However, the Gemara makes the qualification here. Va'ani mili b'dvarim shebegufay. But that's only if it was a personal avera. Avol b'mamayna, when it comes to an issue of mamanis, monetary issue, ad'mahadar l'more. There's no judging favorably. So you know that he did the avera. You saw that he did the avera. You know that it was an avera, right? You have to know that it's an avera too. Maybe you didn't really have the facts. Whatever it is, then there's no such thing as tshuva until he actually makes amends, until he actually pays back. What's that? If you did, meaning in Okanami, or whatever the case is, private matter doesn't necessarily mean, you know, behind closed doors per se. The point is more an issue of bein adam l'makom, not something that he did to somebody else. If it's something that he did to somebody else, it's not called doing tshuva until you make it up to the person. When it's an issue of money, hey. What's that? Okay, go ahead.
First of all, why is it different for a couple? Why should we be special anyway? Why do we question you?
Why shouldn't this apply for any Jew? Why shouldn't this apply for any Jew? So the answer is,
maybe you should give him a higher benefit. Maybe you should say that Shema Satshuva, but maybe I don't understand correctly. Maybe it's not even a better
one. Oh no, that's a given. We're already beyond that. There's no question. There's no question that as long as you don't know the facts, there's nothing to talk about. The Gemara also says this only applies if you saw it. If a person heard that a Talmud Chacham did an Aveira, what do you mean? You heard? That's nothing. Read it in the paper. Right? That's called saw. That's saw. Right? But it means you know for a fact that he did an Aveira. Until you know it for a fact, there's nothing to talk about. If it could be that he didn't do it, the discussion doesn't begin. We're talking about whatever the theoretical case would be where you know that he did it. Meaning that al-pi halacha, you have the right to believe it and the right to establish it, you know that it happened. After all this has been ascertained 100%, you still have to give the benefit of the doubt that he did tshuva. Now this is something that Taka applies to a Talmud Chacham per se, because The halachas of giving people the benefit of the doubt are pretty distinct. Meaning as follows. The way it works is like this. Here's the rule. When you're talking about a regular person, the halacha is that when the factors are equal, you're mechuyev. You're obligated to give him the benefit of the doubt. When things are leaning more in the negative, then it's considered a mitzvah. It's what we call midas chasidus. It's pious to give him the benefit of the doubt, even when things are leaning more in the negative direction. Now, by the way, again, all this only applies for what you're thinking for yourself. You can't talk about him anyways. But what you're thinking for yourself. So even if things are leaning against, it's pious to. With the Talmud Chacham, there is a chiyuv to give him the benefit of the doubt, even when things are leaning in the negative direction. And here we're saying that even when it's 100%, let's say he tells you, I shouldn't have done this. You know, it's an aveira 100%. Whatever the case will be, you know it. You saw it and you know it. You still have to give him the benefit of the doubt that he did tshuva. By the way, there's another side of the coin also. A rasha, we're actually obligated to judge him disfavorably even when we see him doing something good. Meaning, that's the din. Rabbi Nina says that. Chabad Chaim mentions this too. When you see a rasha, you know he's a rasha, did something good, you have to figure out why his intent was really bad. Meaning what we say about a Talmud Chacham, when it's leaning to the negative, you have to figure out, you know, give him the benefit of the doubt and construe it in a positive way. With a rasha, you see a positive thing, construe it in a negative way. That's a big discussion. I don't want to get into the particulars of that now. But back to our Talmud Chacham. So, what's that? Oh, so then we have this din that you have to assume that he did tshuva. You have to assume that he did tshuva. Now, we have to note. What's that? Okay, Tarkacha is a different story. Give Tarkacha. Sure, give Tarkacha. We're talking about beyond Tarkacha and beyond figuring out the facts. Lamaisa, how now do I relate it? Tarkacha, give Tarkacha, if it's relevant. Yeah. Okay. Now it's interesting, by the way, the Chassam Sofer says a strong thing. If we have Chassam Sofer to say this sort of thing, he says the Gemara is not talking about Gezel. He says a Talmud Chacham, there has never been a case of I never saw a case of a Talmud Chacham committing Gezel, because if he does, he's not a Talmud Chacham, and you can think anything you want about him all the time, day and night. So that's how the Chassam Sofer puts it down. He says, well, when we say an issue of money, it means one of those more subtle things. He didn't pay a worker right away, right? He waited the next day, or these different subtle things that you see coming up. Gezel, he says, Talmud Chacham don't do that. If a Talmud Chacham did, he's not a Talmud Chacham. Think about him whatever you want. But again, that's only, again, the Lashon of the Gemara, the Mefarshim stressed that. Imra Isa, if you saw. Meaning, hearsay, we have to realize again, is a rule that Chazal tell us, Tris Kruzolat Tosayin. Lashon Hara has a lot of success. Lashon Hara is easily believed. That's how Hashem built into the Teva. And therefore, the challenge of the Isser to accept and believe Lashon Hara is very challenging. It's very challenging, even though logically it's compelling, because almost always hearsay is distorted. But, okay. Now, by the way, I'll also note, we're going to be going through a whole sugya here of Kvoid Talmid HaChacham, the dignity of the Talmid HaChacham. Talmid HaChacham are enjoined to make sure that they don't put themselves in compromising situations and appearances, etc. In fact, we'll get to it soon. I mean, we'll mention it soon. The Rambam says, one of the things that you're menada a person for, we're going to see soon, you put a person into Nidui if he talks disparagingly about a Talmud Chacham. Also, a Talmud Chacham who creates bad rumors, meaning has bad rumors circulating about him, he's also put into Nidui. Talmud Chacham has to be careful. The idea being that the whole concept here is really a more fundamental concept. It's not an issue of there's this elite group that have special privileges. That's not the point. The Rambam, right at the beginning of Hilchos Talmud Chacham, you see that the halachas of the kavod of a Talmud Chacham are very, very, very severe. Today we live in a world where these things, we become so desensitized to these things because everybody just says whatever they want, and like we said the other day, it's even industrialized on a whole scale level, wholesale. But the point here is, it's not that there's an issue of Talmid Chachamim's rights. When the Rambam introduces the issue of the severity of the honor of a Talmud Chacham, how severely it's taken, he says, yet Talmud Chacham is expected to avoid, like for example, the halacha that everybody has to get up for a Talmud Chacham. Rambam says that Talmud Chacham is expected to avoid that. Talmud Chacham is expected to sneak in when people won't come. Right? It's kind of like a tug of war here. Everyone is expected to accord him very great honor. He's expected to try not to impose that on the tzibur. In fact, the Rambam says that often Talmid Chachamim, the pious people of the past, would often, this he already doesn't put down as a chiyuv, but he says when he would go to, when he wanted to go from point A to point B, they would make these crazy detours in order to go through areas where people didn't recognize them, so as not to bother people to have to stand up, accord them on, or whatever it is. But what's the point? What's the point? What's the issue here? The issue here is something else. It's not an issue of these people's rights. It's an issue of all of Klal Yisrael's sense of values. That's really what it's an issue of. Klal Yisrael's sense of values. More important than the Talmud Chacham himself is us having the right sense of values. Us having our priorities straight in terms of what we admire, what we consider important. Now this is very, very important because Judaism entails being attuned to things that are not tangible, right? Things that are beyond the surface. Spirituality, right? Shabbos is such a special day beyond all the rest of the week. You see that? You feel differently on Shabbos? The weather different? What's different about Shabbos? Nothing in the physical world. Yet we're expected to be attuned to what's going on below the surface. So what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to bring it out. Right? If you ask our kids, they'll say, oh, Shabbos is a very, very different day. Right? The whole house is different. We dress differently. We eat differently. We need to use external means to stress for ourselves, to create for ourselves that association that Shabbos is something special. It has to be done artificially. Right? We don't feel it in a natural way. We're in Olam Hazeh. So therefore, change your clothes, take a shower, and have special food. The whole atmosphere is different. We work as hard as we can to create an atmosphere which creates that special association with Shabbos. This is what we're supposed to do with all issues of spirituality, and most importantly, Talmud Chacham. Why most importantly? Because again, the issue is not his honor per se, this guy, Rabbi Goldberg. That's not the issue. The issue is that in our minds, we want to have a very clear focus of what we admire, what we aspire for, what we're all aiming for, what we want to emulate, what we want our children to be, and therefore we work as hard as we can to put a halo over the heads of these people. It's very easy to admire the commander of a commando unit, right? That comes naturally. We don't have to train our kids to do that. But in Yiddishkeit, and let's say there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. But in Judaism, it's not just an issue of what's right and what's wrong. It's very important to have clear what's more important than what. Right? Just as it's important to know right from wrong, it's important to distinguish important from unimportant. And therefore, since no, people don't naturally have that respect for a Talmud Chacham. Which means that in general, people won't naturally feel that the most admirable pursuit, not because somebody else is doing it, but for me to do, for me to want my kids to do, is the occupation of a Talmud Chacham, meaning learning Torah, that's the most important thing. That's where the biggest covet lies. We have to create that halo. Not for the sake of the Talmud Chacham. In fact, it's a Talmud Chacham job, Talmud Chacham's job, to try to avoid it. But we need to do it for ourselves, for our children, and for a general sense of values and Klal Yisrael. That's the idea. There was a Jew by the name of Frank. Not first name, last name. I forgot what his first name was. Frank. He was a well-known queer in Europe. Very teridika person. And he was a well-known supporter of yeshivas. Rosh Yeshiva used to come to him. One time, Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman came to his house. It was a snowy, muddy day. So Balchadam Lasseman came to the front door. It was a big, fancy mansion. He came to the front door, and he decided, you know, he's full of mud up to his halfway up to his knees. He's not going to come in the front door because he's not going to tromp across, you know, the living room with all his mud. So he went around to the back, to the kitchen entrance where the maids and where the servants used to come in, which was a dirty area. So he came in, he asked if he could speak to the Balabais, and he was told to wait. Now the Balabais had been sitting in the living room, and he was told that Rabbi Chanan Wasserman is waiting for him. So he didn't come in, I didn't see him come in. Where? How did he get in? So he went into Rabbi Chanan, and he asked him, where'd you come from? He said, I came in the back. He said, why'd you come in the back? He said, I came in the back because my boots are muddy, and I'd rather muddy the delivery area than the living room. So this is what he told him. He told him, please, I'm asking you a personal favor. Go back out and ring the front door and tramp through my living room with your muddy boots. He said, I have two daughters, he said. I'm trying to train them. I work so hard to counter the notion that me, the big, important, wealthy guy, with everybody coming to me, and the whole world is prancing around me, that's important. And the way I try to show them that is by dropping everything when someone like you comes. And showing that comes before it all. He said, for a person, if you come into the back door, right, so you don't want to get it wet, that's countering my whole purpose. You'll bring out my whole purpose if you come into the living room with your muddy boots, and that comes before everything else. Right? This person ended up marrying both of his daughters. There are two versions of exactly who they ended up marrying. But to two brothers-in-law. I heard that it was Rabbi Susanna Meltzer and Moshe Mordechai Epstein, the two who ended up becoming together the Korosh Yeshivas of Slabodka. I'm not sure if it works out years-wise. I'm not sure. Whatever it is, the point of the story is that he got what he wanted. He got what he wanted. But again, it's a person who made a point of putting the Hebrew in. So this is the big value of Kavod Talmid HaChachamim, which again, today is so trampled. It's style, and there's this delight, this glee in finding something, a scandal, and blowing it up, right? And again, getting back to my good old agenda with the media. Anytime something comes up, it's broadcast all over the place. Afterwards, worry about the fact. Right? And people get the impression, oh, they're not everything they're cut out to be. Look, it was not one, not two, but three incidents over the last couple of years with these so-called rabbis. And you know what the problem is? The countless Talmid HaChachamim, whose every day of their life is an inspiring story. Are those ever reported? No. Have the three who messed up, who would know about it? The few people around them. No. The Rishayim are right there. Again, the Satan's got his whole system there. Get it all out. When a person like Avshalom Zalman died, we said the other day, right? 300,000 people at the Levaya. The irreligious world was shocked. They had never heard of the man. Apparently, he never had a scandal. He never made it into the papers because he just lived a life of piety, selflessness. That doesn't make it into the papers. Right? They were shocked. And I said the other day, I think I said it this year, how one of the reporters, in a moment of honesty, said, we call them sheltered. How could it be that there's a man living here in Yerushalayim that all of Yerushalayim was paralyzed because he died? 300,000 people, all Yerushalayim shut down for the day. And all of us are scrambling to research who the man is. He's been living here for the last 80 years. Nobody knows who he is. And that's just one. There are 50,000 of those. But then you don't hear about it, right? But it's not interesting. It's not interesting, it also defeats the purpose, right? Kavod Talmid HaChachamim. Kavod Talmid HaChachamim is dragged through mud today. That's a part of why the door today looks the way it does. Okay.
Why are you naturally? How you brought
depends on how you grew up. Exactly. When you live in a place, when you live in a society where the halo is put on the Talmid HaChachamim, children grow up in all of Talmid HaChachamim. When you live in a place where, at the Shabbos table, they're busy talking about the rabbi, right? Then children grow up with attitudes about rabbis. Yeah. Okay. We'll move on. Lama Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Stop more on the subject. Bichav Dalid, huh? Lashem Shemaim. Yep. I'm sure it was Lashem Shemaim now also, when the 80-year-old Rav of Givatayim, 80-year-old Rav of Givatayim, been the Rav there for 40 years, was locked out of his office. Why? They decided he's too old. Well, there is such a law, by the way. There's such a law. It was never invoked. Right? Now they're making a cleanup of the rabbis. Right? You have young politicians are controlling the careers of rabbis. 80-year-old Rav, he's been the Rav in Givatayim from before these people were born. Yeah? Well, these are Talmid HaChachamim showed up one day at the Mu'atza Datit at his office and it was locked. They had changed the lock. This is something going on this week. These are Talmid HaChachamim. What's that? Oh, he said he's going to continue doing his job in the hall. Okay. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Yeshua ben Levi said, Bechof Dalid Mekoimis, there are 24 instances in Shas where we see Bezdin Menadin al Kvod HaRav, that Bezdin will issue a Nidui because the honor of a Rebbe was slighted. Vekulam shaninu b'mishnaseinu, and all of them appear in our Mishnah. There are 24 such instances in the Mishnah. Omar le Rabbi Elazar. So Rabbi Elazar said, Heiche, where? 24 instances. Omar le. So he told him, Lechitishka, go check it out and you'll find them. So Nafak Dak v'ashkach. That just kind of reminds you, someone told me that he well, these are things that you hear all the time. They asked Reb Chaim Kanievsky a shayla. Where is there such a chazal? Chaim Kanievsky was on his way home from shul. So Chaim Kanievsky is walking kind of with his eyes closed. Not brachas, not Shabbos, not Eruvin. Basically going through the Masechtos of Shas, and with his eyes closed on the way home. Up, oh, it's a medrash in this place. So that's basically what's going on here. But as I said, 24 places in Shas? Thought about for a minute. Where? Right? So he told him, "Lechitishkach, go look for it." Nafak dak va'ashkach. So he went out. He really checked that out well, and he came up with plus three. That's all. Went through all of Shas. Which three? So we're missing 21. We'll see. Hamizalzel b'netilas yadayim. It was the case of the fellow who made light of netilas yadayim, of the obligation to wash. We'll see soon. And a person who speaks disparagingly about a deceased Talmud Chacham, and a person who speaks with chutzpah towards Hashem. All these things, as we'll see soon, is called slighting the honor of a Rebbe. What are these examples? Meaning these were actual instances. What happened? There was an instance of someone who spoke disparagingly about deceased Talmid HaChachamim. Maidi. What's that case? It's not. It says in the Mishnah, this is a debate between Akavya ben Mahalala, going back almost to the beginning of the period of the Tanoim. Akavya ben Mahalala was one of the earliest Tanoim. So he was having a debate with the Chacham. Who are your oimer? He used to say, he held, a mashkin lois hagiris lois hamishuchreres. We know that there's a din that if a woman is warned, a married woman is warned not to seclude herself with so and so, saita. And she does. So she drinks the saita waters, right, which test if she actually committed adultery or not. So he says, we don't do this procedure with a convert woman or a maidservant who was free. Why? Because the parsha says Yisrael. This is given specifically for the biological children of Israel. It doesn't work with newcomers. The Chachamim say Mashkin. No, we do. And converts and maidservants also. Freed maidservants. Amrulai. So they told him, you see that we're right. Maisa de Karkemis. There was an incident with Karkemis. Shivcha Mishucheres Yerushalayim, who was a freed maidservant in Yerushalayim. Ishkua Shmaya Ve'Avtalion. And Shmaya and Avtalion, who were the heads of the Sanhedrin at the time, they did have her drink. So you see that yes, a freed maidservant would also drink. Omar Lohem. So he responded kind of like with a smirk, and he said, Dugma Yishkua. Okay, yeah, they gave it to drink because it's their own kind. Meaning, Shmaya and Avtalion, both of them came from Gerim. Both came from Gerim. So he said, yeah, sure they gave it to drink. They want to show that Gerim are just like anybody else. Ooh. V'nidu. Immediately he was put into Nidu. Umeis v'niduyay. And he died in excommunication. What happens then? V'saklu bezden es aroinoy. They had his coffin stone. So that is the instance where a person spoke disparagingly about a deceased Talmud Chacham, and he was put into neither, even though he was a very great person.
Who was it?
Sorry?
Who was it?
Akavya ben Mahalalel. No. Oh, so let's see now. So yeah, this might cause us to feel a bit uncomfortable. Akavya ben Mahalalel was one of the most celebrated sages in the early Mishnah days. So let's see, we'll have something now that'll make us feel a little better. What was the next instance? Well, whatever it is, we'll just note. Whether it was with the Kavi Ben Malal, whether it wasn't, this is the halacha, this is Paskin, Lumaisa, person who speaks disparagingly about a deceased Talmud Chacham, is put into Nidu. Now, we Lamaisa rule that they are. Yeah. Now, Ramizalzov and Netilas Yadayim. What was the next instance? It was an instance of a person who made light of Netilas Yadayim. Maihi. What's that about? It's not. This is a continuation to what we just saw, right? We just saw that Akavya ben Mahalalel was excommunicated for speaking ill, speaking disparagingly, disparaging expression. It was really just like a slip of the tongue about Shmaya and Avtalion. So Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda responded to this and he said, Chas v'shalom sh'akavya ben Mahalalel nisnado. Chas v'shalom that should have happened. And that Akavya ben Mahalalel should be excommunicated. Shein azon in eretz al kol adam b'Yisrael. When the azor would be closed, here's an expression. On Erev Pesach, you had all the Jews coming to the Azara for the Korban Pesach. It was done l'maisa in three shifts. But l'maisa, that was one day when every Jew was in the Azara. So, they would say, there's no one in Israel as great as him. They said, when the Azara would be closed, it would not contain anybody. B'chokma u'betara u'b'yiras chet. Anybody as great in Torah wisdom, or as pure, or as on as high a level in yiras chet, in fear of sin. In piety, Ka'akavya ben Mahalalel, he was of superlative greatness. So this could not have happened with him. Elasminidu. Rather, there was somebody else at around that period who was excommunicated. By the way, it's interesting. I'll just note, right? Rabbi Yehuda is coming and denying. What exactly is he denying? The historic facts. So it was known that he made that comment. It is known that in that debate he said they fed her like. Dugma Yishkua in Hebrew, that's how it goes. It was like he spat it out. Dugma Yishkua. Now, Akavya ben Mahalalel, it was known that he made that comment. Yet, that could be understood in one of two ways. We just said before that what he meant was they were her kind, so they gave it to her. But actually, Rabbi Yehuda says, Tosfos cites a different shot. Rabbi Yehuda says it's not what he meant. He said, Dugma really means something that looks like. That's what the word Dugma means. Something that looks like. So actually what he said was, they did not really give her real saita water. They gave her something that looked like saita water. That's what he meant when he said Dugma Yishkor. They didn't mean, well, they look like her. He meant they gave her something that looked like saita water. He wasn't saying anything disparaging about them. He was simply refuting, yes, he knew that they had fed a freed maid servant. And he said, they didn't actually give her the real water. They gave her something that looked like it just in order to frighten her. There wasn't anything disrespectful that he said. So yes, he made that comment, but the comment, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, the comment was misunderstood by the previous sages. It wasn't really, it wasn't anything disparaging about it. So now, El Esmi Nidu, who was it that was excommunicated at that time? Esel Ozor ben Chanoi. It was Ozor ben Chanoi. Somebody else. Perhaps a wise man, but certainly nowhere on the caliber of Akabe ben Malal. What was the story with him? Shatikbek ben Netilas Yedayim. Yes, he didn't hold of Netilas Yedayim. He didn't go for the whole thing. So they put him into Nidui because he took lightly the instruction of the sages. When he died, they sent and they had a big stone placed on his coffin. The lamedcha, just again to bring on the point, if a person is excommunicated and he dies in excommunication, bezdin seiklinus haroina, bezdin will stone his coffin. Next, what was the third case? Here we have these two instances. What's that? Yes. A person gets out of nidui by coming to bezdin and demonstrating tshuva for whatever the issue was. In the case of a talmud chacham, it will mean going and asking mechila. In the case of a deceased talmud chacham, it will mean doing tshuva. Again, the implications are about what you asked the other day. How does it work when you speak about a deceased talmud chacham? I didn't find anything clear, but I did find more implications that no, it's not an issue between you and him. It's an issue of a chet between the person and Hashem, and it's simply an issue of tshuva. That's what the implications are. Yes, so it seems that they initially did bury the person in the coffin. I don't know exactly how it worked and when they did what, but they definitely were dealing with coffins a lot back then. Yeah. Now, the next example was a person who slights the ultimate Rebbe. Who's the ultimate Rebbe? Hashem. Hamegis datei klapei malo, a person who is chutzpedik towards Shamayim. What's such a case? Mayhi. What's such a case? Ditnan. Shalach lo Shimon ben Shetach. Remember the story of Choni Amagel? He was the one in Mesech Betainis that when there was a drought, he made a little circle in the ground. And he went in there and he said to Hashem, I'm not coming out until you send rain. So it started drizzling. He said, Hashem, come on, that's not what I was talking about. So, started pouring viciously in torrents. Choni Amagel said, nothing doing. Then it started raining just right. So, Choni was happy. So that was an inspiring story, but Shimon ben Shetach, who was the head of the Sanhedrin at the time, did not take so well to it. Shalach lo Shimon ben Shetach. So Shimon ben Shetach sent a message to Choni Amagel. You really should be excommunicated. If not for the fact that you're choini, I would excommunicate you. Aval, meaning you behaved completely inappropriately. You don't talk that way to Hashem. Certainly not in public. Aval ma ese. Well, what can I do? You act mischievous before Hashem. You give him cheek, and he gives you what you want. That's what Shimon ben Shetach is saying. I would have had my take on the matter, but apparently you have special connections with Hashem that I can't relate to. Right? What's that? It's not an issue of halacha. It's an issue of appropriateness. Was it appropriate or not? At first glance, Shimon ben Shetach says not. But if Hashem basically chuckled and slapped him on the back, so which is actually what happened, in figuratively, Okay, apparently for him it was appropriate. So he said, hey, let me just finish. It's like, you know, when you have the little kid with the chachmas. He says something chutzpahdik, but it's so sharp that all the adults just laugh and give him a candy. Right? And that's basically what happened here with Chayni HaMa'agel. It was not appropriate, but yet he was so close with Hashem, and Hashem had such a soft spot for him that, you know what? Hashem just gave him the prize anyways. What? This is part of what he saw. Exactly. Yeah, that's what he saw. So, Hashem ben Shetach L'Maisel was impressed. He said, see, a person can reach such a close relationship with Hashem. About you, the Pasuk says, Yismach Avicha B'Imecha, your mother and father will be happy. And the one who bore you will rejoice. Meaning, he's saying, for me, this is mind-boggling, he's saying. But look, so he was saying in front of our eyes, a person who has such a chummy relationship with Hashem, it's amazing. Yerushalmi puts it a little differently. Yerushalmi says that there was Shimon ben Shetach had a little bit of a more intricate problem with what he did. He said, Neila, the way Yerushalmi presents it, the issue was not the inappropriateness, but he says, you risk the terrible Chilul Hashem, because there's no guarantee that Hashem will ever answer. And therefore, for example, right, he says, for example, in the time of Eliyahu HaNavi, there was an absolute decree for 2 years. There was not going to be rain. So what would have happened if that was the case here, and there wouldn't have been rain? There would have been a terrible Chilul Hashem. He said it was just that if there wouldn't have ended up coming rain. He said, Chayni HaMa'agel, the greatest tzaddik, said that was a bad call on your part to set yourself up for such a situation. Okay. No, there's a different way. The style in which he did it, the demanding way. What's the David and David? A person can make a circle and say, I'm not coming out. It's a little bit more blatant. Okay. Fine. So those are the only, whatever it is, we found three instances in Mishnah where they've been excommunicated someone because of inappropriate behavior towards greater ones than him, be it deceased Tamei Chachamim, the sages in general, or Hashem.
Only two of them actually have.
Sorry?
Only one of them actually have.
So the truth is, all three happen for our purposes, meaning, what Rabbi Shimon ben Levi is trying to infer is that these sorts of things warrant excommunication. He's trying to derive halakha l'maaseh. So he's saying, we see that these three things warrant it. Now, it could be, you're right, in two of the cases, the excommunication didn't actually happen. But what he's inferring is the halacha l'maaseh. Now the Gemara says, the Suleka, that's what Rabbi Elazar can come up with. So we still have a 21 case gap between Rabbi Elazar and Shimon ben Levi. He says there's another 21 cases. So is that all Rabbi Elazar could come up with? No, there are more cases. The Tani Rabbi Yosef. Tudus ish roimi, Tudus of Rome, Hiniges b'nei roimi, la'achilam g'doyim mikulosim b'lei lipsokim. He introduced a new minig in Rome. These were Jews who were living far from Eretz Yisrael. They didn't come for the regel. It was actually Beis HaMikdash at the time. But they were far away. So he wanted them to at least be connected. So what did he do? Had a great idea, very inspiring. They took goats, slaughtered them, skewered them, roasted them like you would do for the Korban Pesach, so at least they're part of the experience. The problem is that this is severely prohibited by the Chacham, right? So Shalach by Shimon ben Shetach. Once again, we have Shimon ben Shetach sending his warnings. Il mali tudus ata. If not for the fact that you're tudus, I would excommunicate you. You could cause the Jews to be eating karbanos outside. Meaning, it's very easy for a person who knows that every year he eats his mat karban pesach. That's basically the idea. If a person just so much as says, this goat will be for the karban pesach this year, it turns into a real karban. If you then slaughter it and eat it outside of Yerushalayim, it's a chiyuv karis. And therefore he's playing with fire here. To get people used to the idea that they're kind of eating the Korban Pesach, all you need is one simple to come and actually declare a Korban Pesach and earn karas. And therefore, and Lamaisa, right? We know that Lamaisa, we don't eat roasted meats on Lel Pesach. Not even roasted chicken. It's got to be cooked in a pot. So whatever it is, why didn't he count this? This is another instance. So the Gemara answers, "B'mishnaseinu kamina." No, we're only counting cases from the Mishnah. V'ha b'raisi. Whereas this is a b'raisa. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Obenas nisin leka." But is there nothing in the Mishnah? V'ha'ikya d'tanan. We do have the following instance. It says, there was the famous machloikis between Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim, right? The much celebrated machloikis. Where, right, the whole story with Leib HaShemayim, he, whatever it is, started with the following case. We know that earthenware vessels, if an earthenware vessel becomes Tameh, it has to be broken. Can't be purified in the mikveh. Now, what happens if an earthenware vessel becomes Tameh? We're talking about an oven in this case, a portable oven. Oven becomes Tameh, and the guy is a wise guy. He cuts it very neatly into neat slices, horizontally. Neat slices horizontally. It's broken. Okay? Now he comes and glues it back together. It became Torah once it was broken. And now he's okay. Is that good? So, Chat Chai Chulius, if he cut it into segments, and he put earth between each one, Rabbi Elazar mitayer. Rabbi Elazar says, that's fine. V'chachamim mitami. But the Chachamim say it's no good. V'zeu tanuri shel aknayim. This was known as the oven of the serpent. My aknay. Why is it called serpent? Omer Yehuda, Omer Shmuel. Melamed shekifu halachis k'aknay zeh. Because there was so much halachic debate revolving around this oven, like a snake that's coiled up. It was full. There was always so much debate revolving around it. V'timuh. But they ended up ruling that it's Tameh against Rabbi Eliezer, and he never accepted. V'tanya. So he was defying the majority opinion. V'tanya. It says in the Braisa, Oysayayoyim. On that day, when they actually ruled that it's Tameh, and he was continuing to insist that it's Tar, and to rule that it's Tar, he didn't accept the majority opinion. So what did they do? They had to make a strong statement. They view called Tar Shetir Rabbi Eliezer. They brought all of those things that Rabbi Eliezer ruled were tahar, that had touched such an oven, with sof of lefana, and they made a point of burning it all in front of him, with a v'soif barchu, and then they issued a nidui against him. Okay, this was a tragic story in history, a lot to talk about it, but whatever, we're talking about Rabbi Eliezer's best friends who did this, including his brother-in-law. Gamliel was his brother-in-law. Well, whatever it is, this was a case of a person who was excommunicated once again because he was flouting the authority of the sages. Now that itself was a machlokes. You know, there's a clear-cut halacha that you have to follow, you have to bow to the majority. What was Rabbi Eliezer doing? Even if he holds he's right, the Torah says, even if you are right, you have to bow to the majority. But it was a little more complex than that. That was why this was getting so sticky. Rabbi Eliezer held that the whole concept of bowing to the majority only applies when you have the proper Sanhedrin and the Lishkas HaGazis, which represents all of Klal Yisrael. At that point in history already, the goals was already setting in. It was after the Churban. Jews were already dispersed. The Sanhedrin was not the top of the pyramid of the whole Klal Yisrael. So he held it was no longer that authority. It wasn't the authority of Sanhedrin. It's a bunch of people against me. But I hold that they're all wrong. And he held that he didn't have to bow. They held that the majority was binding. Was Machlokes whether the majority was binding or not? And therefore, since he held that it wasn't, he didn't bow to it. So they put it. What's that? Yes, he did. Nidu is a nidu. That doesn't make a difference whether it's justified or not. He abided by the nidu until the end of his life. Now, a few little haki nidu b'masnis in loitam. So the Gemara says, you're right. That was a case of a nidui, but after all, it's not in the Mishnah. Mishnah talks about the machloikis. It's a braisa that says that they actually made a nidui. Okay, we have another two lines here, but already late in starting the next year, so we'll end here for tonight. Okay.